Those corona measures. All eyes are on June 9th as theaters, cinemas, and all other venues are allowed to open with a limited number of people, of course. So we talked to the general director of La Monnaie Opera House in Brussels about its first performance in front of a live audience in many, many months.
I'm Peter de Calloway. I'm general and artistic director of La Monnaie, the Federal Opera House in the heart of Europe, in the capital of Europe, actually. And it's an amazing job.
Is Tosca the first opera with a live audience at La Monnaie since, I think, last autumn?
Yes, we had performances with audience in September, October. And then, of course, like all of the theaters, we had to close down. And Tosca will now be the first one that will happen with an audience. We have created an opera which was specifically made for, using all the limitations of Corona, also the storytelling, which was Is This the End, the first part, which was really created purely for a streaming platform. But we also created a new production, which also respected all the Corona measures of Die Tote Stadt. Die Tote Stadt, which was existing exactly 100 years, and I didn't want to give up that project. So we made something where we had the orchestra on stage with all the necessary spacing, with a reduced orchestra version, and then everything performing on the orchestra pit and in the auditorium. So it was really also completely adapted to the situation. This Tosca actually is a completely different thing because actually we are on stage working with a reduced orchestra. We made a version by Frédéric Chazelain for 35 musicians so that we can have in the pits, all the necessary spacing between them. We also have been working like this on all the other projects we did because La Monnaie did continue, even though we make things only for streaming, concerts, opera. But we work with these famous bubbles, the bubbles where you isolate the singers from the orchestra. The orchestra is a bubble, the chorus is a bubble. They all work from their specific spaces. And on stage, only those people who are tested 3 times a week can be in interaction with each other.
La Monnaie was one of the performance houses that really embrace this new kind of production, these digital productions. Why did you decide to go ahead with that rather than just cancel everything? Because I can't imagine it was financially advantageous to have done that.
Well, there's two answers to that. The first thing is when we were confronted with this pandemic more than a year ago now, many colleagues reacted in different. For me, it was very difficult to stop the motors of the ship because the moment you do that, it's much more complicated to start again. So we decided to continue to create. And in rather than putting the productions on stage, they went into a container for later use. So all the investments that we already made have not been thrown away. Everything that we made in regard to sets, costumes, requisites, all the money we had put into the new productions has been saved for later years. Some projects will even be premiered in other venues before they come back to La Monnaie. But for me, it was a choice to keep people at work, of course, in responsible ways, to give the artists the possibility to recuperate their contracts at a later stage because they lost their work. But the fact that we have postponed the projects means that they don't lose their income, even if the income is coming at a later stage. We were able to do this for two reasons, because the personnel, in a way, is subsidized. We have the subsidy in order to create. But in fact, what we use the subsidy for is to pay the people. So I had to keep them at work in order to make clear that we were doing something with that investment. Secondly, the government have decided in Belgium that tax shelter money is also applicable to streaming, which was a very big help because it meant that we could create our productions. Even without having income from box office, we were able to finance them by tax shelter. The costs were lower because we didn't need as many people as extra people that normally work. For instance, extra chorus was not needed because we avoided productions with chorus. Extra musicians were not needed because we made reduced orchestra versions. Extra technicians were also not needed because we didn't do live performances. So we saved a lot of money. And at the same time, we had added income through the tax shelter. 2021 is going to be more complicated and completely dependent on the number of public we will be able to accommodate. Because at the moment, it's 200. We are counting to be able to go higher than that, to 75% of what has been agreed in the protocols.
But I understand it's 200 or 75%, but not more than 200?
This is totally unclear. In the Flemish protocol, It's not or, it is 75% of your CRM. In what is now on the table, or what is confused at the moment, 75%, but a maximum of 200. Now, for us, that doesn't make sense. I mean, we are a theater of 1,200 seats. 200 people doesn't make sense. If we can guarantee the distance between the people, of course, there is the imposed mask. Of course, there is all the imposed sanitary conditions. We should be able to go up to more than that. And we will do 3 test performances. Also, the air, everything will be measured. First one, 550. Second one, 800. Third one, 1,000. So it would be very strange to go down from the 1,000 again to 200 for the next performance. So we are still waiting to get more news.
What did La Monnaie learn over the last year, or what did you learn maybe as general director that you could take into the future?
Well, first of all, I learned to be patient because you cannot force things. What we've also learned is that we can also work in different ways. We had already the big advantage that La Monnaie had invested in streaming since many years, which means that our productions were always available for streaming after we finished the run with the audiences. Now we were able to use that expertise to create projects only for streaming, which of course is a completely different situation because you don't have your live audiences. But I have to say that in the space of between April 2020 and April 21, we have had over 600,000 views on streaming. I mean, in 1 year, we normally have 130,000 people in the auditorium itself. So to have in 1 year over half a million is quite impressive. So part of that is new audience. That's also something new because the traditional audience like to be in the theater. We like to be in the venue to get the live vibration of the singing, the live vibration of the music making, to feel that intensity of being part of a community, artists, public, you know, it's a feeling which is addictive. There are people, of course, who prefer looking at our work in another way. And that's a kind of new audience. Maybe people who will remain loyal to us when we continue our streaming, which we are intending to do. I think what we've also learned is that we can make projects which are different, which are not really the stage, but which can be also made for another kind of format. Like Is This the End has been a perfect example of this. You know, inspired by the theme of losing people, not being able to say goodbye, being in limbo between life and death, not really knowing what's going on, because that's been the reality for many people. And to create something around that, also with the limitations of COVID, has been really very strong for us, because we had to work in a completely different way. We had to reinvent how to work, how to take the distance, how to narrate a story in a different way. I mean, now with Tosca, we arrive at something where we are again in the normal storytelling. We are again, you know, even if we have some limitations, we are again in a normal as it can be at the moment, way of presenting opera.
So we've only known that venues could open again on June 9th for a pretty short time. Were you already rehearsing Tosca to perform live?
Yes. My starting point has always been that it would be live. It's been an instinct, but it's also been something, you know, we have been in very close contact with the virologues. But in the end, it's not them who take the decisions. It's the political world who take the decisions. I mean, the reason why they don't trust our sector is because they don't know us. They don't come. Political people do not participate in the arts, which is a huge mistake. I keep using the same arguments all the time. You know, if you don't know your Shakespeare, you cannot be a good politician. So you need to go to the theater to understand which mistakes to avoid. Unfortunately, we have a generation of politicians who have no longer that inclination. They don't participate in cultural life. They have no idea what our sector stands for. If they would have, they would trust us. And they would not open the football fields, but they would open the theaters. We are here to confront people with a rich, very rich history. I mean, the stories we are telling are stories that exist for many, many centuries. Our music that we sometimes present exists for decades, for centuries sometimes. And that music is still alive, and that music has still something to tell us. But you have to listen to it.
Let's tell the politicians about Tosca. It's starting on June 11th. So for those who don't know the opera at all, what's it about?
Well, basically, it's about a typical love affair. It's two people who are coming from two different angles, a very libertarian artist, painter, and a very Catholic woman who has been raised in a very traditional way of looking at relations, men and women. She's also a diva. She's an opera singer. She's someone that everyone wants. One of her lovers is Cavaradossi, the painter, Cavaradossi, who comes in the eye of Scarpia, who is the chief of police, and very linked to the Vatican, very linked to power in Rome, very much linked to dark structures. And he finds a way to conquer Tosca in a very strategically well-organized way, to also condemn Cavaradossi and make sure that Cavaradossi disappears by killing him. And by setting up a complete scheme that Tosca believes that in the end it will be a simulated execution. But unfortunately, this is all set up by a very sadomasochistic Scarpia who himself wants to have Tosca. So it's a very, very, very sad story.
It is.
But it's one of Puccini's best scores. It's amazing music. I mean, Puccini is a composer who speaks directly to the emotions. He's someone who was obsessed by human passions. He had a very, very famous libertarian life. And this is also very present in his operas. His operas are always about very strong women. Tosca is one of them. Manon Lescaut is one of them. Butterfly is one of them. Turandot is one of them. He loved women and he loved life. He digs into all the obscure corners of life as well. Nothing human was strange to Puccini. Let's put it like that.
So this is a new production by Spanish director Rafael Villalobos. What has he done with it that's different?
We wanted to really make a Tosca that is connected to its sources. I mean, Tosca is normally performed in three different sets. The first one is the Sant'Andrea della Valle, the Chiesa. The second one is the Palazzo Farnese, and the third one is the Castel Sant'Angelo. Everything happens within 24 hours. So we said we make one set. We make one set, which is like a turning set, which has all the elements of Rome that we want to bring in. Given also the fascist background of Scarpia and his connection to power and to religion and so on, we chose to go for a period, which is the post-Mussolinian period, which is inspired by the buildings of Eur, I mean, the part that Mussolini created in the south of Rome, these very beautiful, almost Stalinistic buildings with references to ancient Rome. So that's basically the inspiration of the set. A second link is also very connected to Rome, which is Pasolini, the films of Pasolini, and the character of Scarpia, which made a very direct link to Pasolini's last film before he was murdered, Salò, which narrates the story of a fascist bourgeois milieu in the Republic of Salo, where power and sexual perversion were very much mixed. So we connect the character of Pasolini to the world of Rome. Actually, the murder of Pasolini will be present in the piece. So two worlds are basically connected. And a third layer is the layer of Caravaggio. Caravaggio, who of course made most of his works in Rome, we have asked one of the most famous Spanish visual artists of the moment, Idáñez, who has made paintings for us. So this idea of the light of Caravaggio, the passion of Caravaggio, also the bloodiness of Caravaggio is very present. So basically, we want to aestheticize the fact that people can be brutal to each other, to give it, like Puccini did that in his music, to give it also in the visuals an aspect which makes something very ugly into something very beautiful, like the paintings of Caravaggio. It's a very intriguing way of reading this piece. Of course, we asked for the public a kind of exercise in looking at this piece in a different way.
Despite actually being a very dark opera, very tragic opera, persecution, execution, suicide, Tosca is in fact very popular among opera goers. Why do you think that is?
I think it's because of the music and the passion. I think when people come to opera, they don't really look at the stories because, you know, the story of Traviata is one of the most women unfriendly pieces. I mean, what happens to this woman is unacceptable. But still, there is this music which is kind of exalting it all. And people just listen sometimes to the music and do not want to have the story told. They think of the Brindisi and the champagne at the end of the first act, but they don't think of the pain that this woman has to go through. So this is the fascinating thing about opera is that people sometimes sublimize the story by the music. What we try to do with this Tosca is sublimize this horror story because it's a Sardou horror story, sublimize it by making it aesthetically very appealing and musically very appealing. You always have to make the connection between what the music is telling you and what the story is actually narrating. Find the reality in between.
Are you selling tickets in bubbles?
No, It's too complicated to sell bubbles. So we always leave one seat in between everyone. So you can come with your partner or with someone who is in your bubble, but you will always have one seat in between. And if you cannot buy, you come on the waiting list and we will inform you about how we proceed with the numbers that are allowed in theater. We are waiting now for the approval of the three test performances, because for the test performance, we will have much more audience with a big disadvantage. Advantage, tickets are cheaper, but the big disadvantage, you need to have yourself tested before you get in. So we need to have people queuing up for the test, waiting for the result, going in. Well, I'm looking forward to welcoming audiences again. And I can tell you that the artists are so eager to perform, so incredibly eager to perform.